Hey everyone!
Hola a todos!
This is Shahira.
And this is Stephanie, and welcome back to Cuento Crimen Podcast.
How is everyone doing? Sometimes I wish that we could have like a interaction and like y'all can talk to us back. I feel like that would be fun.
Yeah, it would be an easier way to have a conversation.
Right, or like right now, like I feel like I'm talking to y'all and then I say like, how's everyone doing? But no one's responding. Mm-hmm. Anyways, we hope you're having a great Wednesday today. And if not, just hang on. Ya nos acaba la semana.
Yes. As always, we are all here for true crime. Hoy vamos a hablar sobre un caso that's super unfortunate. And with this case, maybe some of us who like to travel and specifically travel outside of the country can take something from this. Because like, honestly, when we're traveling, we have a different kind of mindset. You know, we're just out having fun, enjoying ourselves, and we kind of forget a lot. You know what I mean? Like, we're not like thinking as much, I feel like. And I feel like in this case, it's a reminder that, you know, you should still be alert of your surroundings because, you know, you're not very familiar with them.
And it's funny that, like, you mentioned that because recently, I think like just yesterday, I saw a TikTok about a story. I guess like la tía le dijo la historia a la muchacha and it was like about traveling. And oh my God, it like gave me the goosebumps. And I was like, oh my God. And so she was like saying, she's like, if you're basically coming to like over here where I'm at, which is I think with like Baja California. Mm-hmm. She's like, just please be careful. Like, never go anywhere alone. And I was like, yeah, that is true. That
should mm-hmm. be. Yeah. Because you don't know how things work around there, you yeah. know? Or you're not familiar with how to get back to your hotel or how to get back to your Airbnb. You know what I mean?
It's like a foreign place.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. So as usual, we will talk about sensitive topics. Entonces queremos darles una advertencia porque vamos a hablar de temas sensibles.
And again, queremos decir que hablamos de estos casos con todo respeto a las familias y a las víctimas. Okay, let's jump in.
So Jason Lloyd Artist was 20 years old and a Norfolk, Virginia native, and he was living in Southern California. And now, no me puedo imaginar de cómo es Norfolk, Virginia, but what I do know is, like, imagine moving states at that age and you come to such a busy place like LA, like, where there's tons of things to do. Traffic is insane. I don't know, I feel like it would be a big
culture shock.
Yeah,
right?
A big culture shock.
It's like LA, Hollywood, celebrities, like, this is what people think about when you think about LA.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess, like, I don't know, maybe it's a dream that a lot of young people had. Mm-hmm. And in this case, yeah, Jason wanted that. And he moved to California for his education. He was actually studying engineering in Van Nuys.
And so Jason did the big move and he started school and life was flowing for him. Pero Jason quería que su hermanito chiquito, Steve Thomas, 16 años, lo vaya a visitar. And so what he did was that he sent him money so that he can make the trip to California to visit him.
And the two boys shared the same father and they were very close. Jason was determined to make it a fun trip for his little brother. And I feel like me, I'm the little sister, so I could definitely see my mm-hmm. sisters like going out and about to do the most for me.
Yes, especially also like, you know, he's maybe going to California maybe for the first time, right? Yeah. And so he is trying to do his best to show him the best version of California.
Yeah, trying to sell him on the California media.
Yes,
idea.
Exactly.
But, you know, because his brother nomás tenía 16 años, pues no estaba mayor de edad, they were very limited to, you know, what they could do. Like the drinking restrictions in the States and, you know, going out partying. Like,
yes.
You know.
And I think that kind of matters here because it's like you're coming to California and Jason's 20 and his little brother is 16. So it's like kind of like we're not home. There's no parents. Like, let's go all out, you know. And that is like the mindset, you know, mm-hmm. like who wouldn't want to go all out in a new state, you know?
Stephanie's ready.
And so as Jahana was saying, there's a lot of like restrictions for drinking in the States, But, you know, they are in Southern California. Entonces, that means that they can easily cross the border into Tijuana. And that is known for its nightlife and more lenient drinking laws. And the thing was that Jason, yeah, había hecho esto. He had already crossed the border other times and, you know, gone out over there to get drinks. So he was familiar with that. And so that was going to be the plan for, you know, when his brother was going to come along. And, you know, so he was familiar with that. No iba a ser su primera vez en hacer eso.
So Steve Thomas, who was his brother, llegó a visitar a Jason. And como estaba diciendo Stephanie, like, because of the age restrictions, they had planned to take this boys trip down to Tijuana and, you know, to just go out and have fun.
And I guess to speak more on it, I think it's pretty common for a lot of people in Southern California, whether you're the legal age or whether you're not, cross the border and go into Tijuana and try out the nightlife over there.
Or even the food. Like, I can't remember one of our friends from LA that we met in college. I can't remember if it was Leti. I can't remember. But someone would say how they would just drive to Tijuana for the tacos and then drive back.
That sounds very, like, typical, you know?
Yeah. I just can't remember who said that, but...
Mm-hmm. Y también, you know, this case does take place in 1998, and so the drinks were very cheap. And I think that was also perfect for college students who, you know, like, are struggling and are studying and maybe, you know, have a job or not. And so I think that was also another reason why it was such an attractive thing to do.
Yeah.
And at the time, in Tijuana, they were doing all you can drink for $5.
Wow. You can't even get a bag of churros here for $5, like, anymore. How times have changed. Mm-hmm. And so now Steve and Jason are at Tijuana and they are headed to this popular spot called Avenida Revolucion. And it was only like a 2.5 hour drive for them. So honestly, like, if you think about it, 2 hours to get to like another country, it's pretty...
It's not bad.
Yeah.
It's not a very long drive. And so, los dos hermanos y un amigo con el nombre Michael Justin, de 27 años, head over to Tijuana at around 9 p.m. And this happened on August 1st, 1998. Y cuando llegaron, estacionaron el carro de Justin in a 3-story garage, which was only about a minute away from la Avenida Revolución. And this was an entire strip of nightlife. So it only being a minute away parking is kind of like perfect.
It's probably like the designated mm-hmm. area to park. And so, yeah, so they go to the first bar and the bouncer laughed at Steve's age, but of course he still lets him in. Y después allí van al que sigue. But this time Steve didn't get so lucky here. They did not allow him to go in. Justin, the friend, se quedó afuera con él, mientras que Jason fue adentro a agarrar algo para tomar.
And so here's a little bit of background. Steve sabía cómo se comportaba su hermano. And the thing was that his brother, Jason, was prone to get aggressive when he was under the influence. So he's out there having fun, but he's also kind of like watching out for him and even told him to not get to that point where he's drinking a lot and becomes aggressive.
The reason why, like, Steve made it very clear was because in the past, Jason had actually gotten arrested in Tijuana and spent a whole weekend in jail for a confrontation at a bar. And honestly, like, if y'all ever seen, like, a aggressive or, like, a mad drunk man, like, they can get pretty intense.
Mm-hmm. And so at the next bar, the bartenders were pouring drinks into their mouths, you know, so if you can kind of picture it, and they were actually pouring tequila shots. And so that happened, but then they were ready to move on to the next bar. So they got up and were heading out, and that caused a small altercation with the bartenders because they were billing them for those shots, and they were at $6 each. And the thing was that the guys didn't expect to pay for these drinks because the bartenders were the ones actively going to them to pour them. And so they weren't actually ordering them. So they kind of thought that they were like on the house, but that wasn't the case. They were asking them to pay for those shots. And so that caused a small altercation, but nonetheless, they paid and went their way.
I mean, I could see why you pensaron that it would be on the house. But again, you can't forget that is what a bartender does. You know, that is how they get you.
Yeah.
Ellos van a llevarte todas las bebidas, todo el alcohol. And at the end of the day, hey, here's your bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. It's a bit tricky, you know? Yeah. Like, I see why they assumed that they were going to pay for them.
Yeah.
And so at around 11:30 p.m., Jason was at a corner and he was, you know, peeing on the street when some patrol officers went up to him and gave him the choice of paying a $40 fee or he would go to jail and pay the fee at the court for, you know, peeing in public. But he kind of got like saved by the bell because the officers were called in on the radio for something else. And so they kind of just let him go.
Got lucky. And shortly after, Jason bumped into a female cop and he was yelling, and quote, F the police. And Steve tried calming his brother down, you know, because again, he didn't want to ruin the night or just see his brother end in any trouble. But unfortunately, he could not calm him down. The cops demanded for Jason to hand over his watch and $30. Steve ended up paying the money, and then they continued on their way. So I feel like kind of Jason has been on the hot seat, like on and off throughout this mm-hmm. whole night.
Yeah. And at this point, Steve wants to leave. So esa era la meta de Steve, to leave, you know, this whole situation, this whole place. And he just wanted to get to the car so they can relax and see what the next move is, maybe, right? So Steve empezó a caminar un poquito más adelante, pero siempre se estaba fijando atrás, you know, to make sure that his brother was following him. But then at some point, he turned around y su hermano ya no estaba ahí.
I feel like that's scary, like knowing that someone's like, obviously you're with someone and y tú piensas que están ahí and then you turn around and it's gone.
Yeah, it's like 1 second. You had your eyes on Jason, but then he's gone.
And so Steve at this point could not find his older brother, Jason, which is odd because it was like Steph was saying, like just a second ago that he saw Jason following mm-hmm. him, like they were walking back together.
Yeah. And, like, he's right there, you know? Like, he was just there a second ago.
Or, like, even if he, like, did kind of wander off, like, how far could he have gone in mm-hmm. a second?
Yes, it's like he's going to pop out uh-huh. in the next 5 seconds. Exactly. You know what I mean? But no, that wasn't the case. He started looking for him, going through the streets, and he wasn't getting lucky. He couldn't find his brother, Jason, who was just right behind him.
So Steve heads to the car nevertheless. Y él está esperando que, you know, throughout the streets, Jason, Joel just show up too. But unfortunately, that was not the case. Instead, their friend Justin ends up finally getting to the car as well. Y le dice que Jason is now sitting in a police car with 4 officers. Y todo eso está pasando shortly after 1 a.m.
And so what they do next is, you know, go ask some cops nearby. And they said que if Jason was detained, that he would be in jail, and told the two young men to come back the next day. Entonces, they kind of felt like they couldn't do anything. And so Steve and Justin headed home. And they came back the next day and they went straight to the police station. But when they got there, they were surprised to find out that there was no record of Jason's arrest.
And the following day, which is now Tuesday, Steve received una llamada from the American consulate to tell him that Jason was found dead.
It's kind of, you know, I feel like it unraveled really quickly, right?
Yeah.
It's like your brother went missing and you guys know that he was in a cop car and there's no record of that.
Yeah.
And then the next day you find that he is no longer alive. It's like there's so many missing puzzle pieces.
It's like very sharp turns.
Mm-hmm. How did it escalate to death, you know? And so what they told Steve was that Jason was found in una area known as La Zona Norte. And this place was described as, in a quote, the seedy part of town, end quote. And like the more they thought about it, it's like it just didn't make sense. Porque how did Jason get to this area? Like this place mm-hmm. was not known to be a touristy spot. he was already in the touristy spot in esa, like, avenida de muchos bares. Like, that was an attraction. So how did he get to, like, the outskirts of the town?
Or also, I mean, like you said, there's just missing points. Like, how are you following your brother, then supposedly in the back of a car, and then you end up in that part of the town? And also, I wonder how far they were from each other, like, these places. Police inferred that Jason maybe tried getting back to the border, and then that's why he got to the place where he was found. But then it's just like, well, then what about that part of him being in the back of a police car?
Yeah, it's still not adding up. And also, this is just someone inferring that this is what happened. Like, there's no evidence, you know? Like, hardcore, maybe, like, video evidence that he...
From what happened.
That he himself went over there, you know? Entonces, the news of this death spreads amongst the family. And la mamá de Jason, Rose Argington, was so distraught in finding that her son was no longer alive that she had to check into the hospital that night.
And everyone else was in shock, too, and... You know, they couldn't wrap their heads up as to how this all happened. Like, they thought it was a mistake. And Tina Martin Smith, que es la tía de Jason, ella fue la persona que fue a Tijuana to identify the body since, you know, she was living in Southern California. She was kind of like the closest family member.
And so the story goes, as what the authorities claim, was that on August 2nd, 1998, which was only the morning after the whole bar night, you know, boys' night in Tijuana. That morning after, Jason was found at around 3 a.m. when a police officer came across his body.
His body was found in a Tijuana alley connecting two rows of car repairs and a bunch of abandoned buildings. His body was bruised and his head was visibly injured.
The autopsy revealed that he had broken ribs and that his death was ruled as a hit-and-run accident.
And the family was not okay with this ruling. They did not agree with it. They truly believe que algo más sinister le había pasado a Jason. Rose, la mamá de Jason, said, and we quote, "I really believe it in my heart that police killed my son," end quote. And honestly, it's a whole conversation to have for like another time, pero in Mexico... Police are very corrupt. So that is something to be very mindful of.
Yeah, that is true. And something else that they noted was that it just didn't make sense why a hit and run would cause like 5-inch marks all over his body and chest and on his face as well. And even the funeral home person, que se llama Jose Martinez, said that Jason had cuts that aren't consistent with a hit and run. And that he believed that he was beaten to death.
Honestly, the way that they describe his body, I would assume that he was also beaten to death. Tina Martin Smith, quien era la tía de Jason, began a campaign to get answers for her nephew's death.
And so, as we were saying in the beginning of the episode, for those that like to travel, I think the question here is like, so how does it work when you are an American citizen who got murdered in a different country? And I feel like that's a big question that is maybe a whole different episode to talk about. And it's kind of outside of our expertise. But within the articles, we did find some things that we want to mention here. So we aren't too sure, but this is what we found.
Yeah, so this is what we found and we're quoting it. So if an American in Tijuana gets killed, kidnapped, arrested, or assaulted, the American Citizen Services Chief is one of the first to hear about it. Then they tried to help the Americans navigate Tijuana and help the local government handle Americans, end quote.
And so how does the states get more involved, right? So the thing that we found was that the Mexican government has to invite the FBI into the investigation, but in this case, they never did, which means that they are limited in what they can do because they don't have jurisdiction and they can only conduct the interviews that they can manage to conduct.
And that must be so frustrating. Like, it's like, come on, like, just let me in. Let me help. Agent Michael Freeman was assigned to this case, but right away he faced challenges such as not having a body. The family had decided to cremate Jason's body due to financial reasons.
So this means that the family couldn't get a second opinion on the body, on the injuries, on the whole autopsy. So they couldn't confirm if the injuries were caused by a car bumper or with a butt of a gun.
And nothing was convincing the Mexican police to do anything until the Unsolved Mysteries segment that showcased Jason's story came out.
And so this segment brought attention, and in the show Unsolved Mysteries, they asked three forensic pathologists to review the report. One agreed with the hit and run finding, but the other two questioned the results. And Jacob Turner, being one of them, said that he was very skeptical about that autopsy.
And after this was aired, the department's assistant internal affairs chief, Marco Quintero, compiled a binder of 205 photographs of Tijuana's municipal police officers, and then they delivered it to the American consulate.
And so on July 26, 1999, Steve Thomas visited the agent in his Norfolk office in Virginia para ver estas fotos. And Steve immediately selected a photo of a female officer with the same ponytail, uniform, and facial features de la mujer that Jason bumped into that night in Tijuana.
And he identified the officers who apprehended him for urinating in public as well.
And on the other hand, Justin was unable to identify anyone in that binder. And so all in all, these identifications were not conclusive. And one of the reasons was because Justin did not identify anyone, and Steve was not so confident in the images that he picked out.
Oh man, it's like it's there, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Later, Marco Quintero disappeared. Michael Freeman said, quote, "He seemed willing to help. You had someone with a heart, and I don't know if he had the permission of his department. I can only surmise he overstepped his boundaries," end quote. Again, like I kind of mentioned earlier, it's the corruption. It's just a mess.
Yeah, that's really scary because if y'all didn't catch that, this guy, Marco Quintero, was the one that compiled that binder for for the investigator. And then he disappeared after this.
It's weird. Mm-hmm. It's like, why would, I don't know. Yeah.
And so Michael Freeman closed the case in the year 2000.
Neither the FBI nor American Citizen Services have ruled out further investigation.
And so that's how the case ended. The family has no answers as to what really happened to Jason. So this case is really like real because a lot of us are traveling and you don't expect these things to happen to you when you're on vacation. It's just really scary that these things are happening. And it's really unfortunate that the family did not get justice and find the answers as to what happened to their loved one. What we could do right now is share this case to bring some attention and also to kind of spread awareness for those that are traveling and to remind ourselves and our loved ones to be more mindful when we are traveling. So yeah, that is all that we have for this week's episode, and we'll see y'all next week.